Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Showtime!
Another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 93 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from audio2u.com. With me on the line, once again, he who has travelled north and south again, Shelton Muller.
Yes.
How was it?
Mate, it was very, very good. It was very interesting.
From the email, it looks like you had a lot of fun.
Yes, I had a lot of fun. If anyone's interested, go to my blog and you can see that we did have a lot of fun. It was very tiring. It's a very tiring thing. I mean, I flew up you take a flight from Melbourne to Brisbane, which is a couple of hours. Then I hung around Brisbane Airport for a couple of hours. Then took a plane to Rockhampton, which was an hour. And then, that night at the camera club, I had to present, a 2.5 hour presentation.
Off the plane and do a presentation.
Basically, I got to my room, had a freshen up shower, and then wham, straight into it.
Right.
And then Saturday all day, from morning through to late afternoon, and I always tend to go over time and give them a little more for their money. We did a portrait workshop, which involved a presentation in the morning, and then a shoot all afternoon. And then on Sunday, we did a wedding photography workshop for them, and that was a small presentation in the morning, just me speaking, not a PowerPoint or anything like that, and then a shoot from lunchtime right on to about 6 o'clock.
So was it someone's wedding, or did you just get a model dressed up as a bride?
No, we bought a wedding dress, and we got models up there, and we had another model who had a bridesmaid dress, so she was very accommodating.
Cool.
So we had a bride and a groom. Then we had a bridesmaid and groomsman, and we swapped them over during the day, actually, because the dress fit both girls, so that they wouldn't get too tired. We actually swapped them over, and we used different locations, and they sort of changed dresses during the day, so that you would have someone fresh, because being photographed all day isn't actually as easy as it looks.
No. I remember my wedding day.
yes, it is. It's hard, And that's why, you and I, we don't get out of bed for less than 10 grand a day, But because it's hard work. And of course, I deliberately got a dress that had, quite a long train and had something to work with so that, we could use it as a compositional feature. So, it was a heavy, heavy dress. And, but they did really, really well. The interesting thing about running a workshop that I learned is that, and I mean no offense to anyone at the workshop, but you realize what people don't know that you take for granted. My theme for both workshops, really, and it was a theme that I wanted to get home, and it's as something we've often talked about here on the podcast, is the theme of find the light and put him in it.
Yep.
And I noticed you did that with your wedding photos too, and we'll come back to talk about that. But for both days, all I did was really I highlighted the necessity of find the light and put him in it. Once you've found the light, what kind of light is it? How do you then interpret that in terms of placing your subject within it, posing your subject within it? Light and mood must be congruent, and for both days, and a lot of people actually attended all three. They paid to attend for the first, the second, and the third, because they never get photography workshops up there that they so
certainly not with somebody of your caliber.
Oh, thank you, Bruce. That's
I mean that without meaning to, put you up on a pedestal, but you are of, I guess, world-class standard, and for a town like Rockhampton, and for those who don't know the area, Rockhampton's only, 20,000 people?
Would be something like that. It's
it's not a big town. So to get someone of your caliber up there, that would be, for those who are interested, quite an achievement.
Well, it was, it's very. Thank you for that. It's a daunting thing in many ways. I even had to sign an autograph while I was there. I did.
The
lady brought
out
a copy of my article in Better Photography magazine, and I had to sign it. And, which was all very weird. She did it with a wry smile herself. Rocking, mate, rocking Rockhampton. I am. Beautiful. And where was I before you?
Sorry, what was I talking about? I don't know.
Anyone think I've had a joint this morning? What am I talking about?
Finding the light and putting people in it.
Yeah, and that was the theme for both those days. And you know, they actually. It's a wonderful thing to watch that light go on. Mm. You know, there was a lady there named Tanya who has just sort of started a part-time wedding photography business.
Right.
And, you know, her equipment was certainly enough, but very, very basic.
Yep.
And her approach was untrained. And right. She was, you know, in as a wedding photographer. And she was lapping it up. And, yeah. You know, the whole concept of finding the light and putting them in it was something that I drove home, and they got, you know, the point of. And then, yeah. Of course, it was the other thing we did. There was a where
they've
I stayed.
They've obviously
was,
not been Shutters Inc. listeners until now.
Well, I've hopefully converted them, because I did mention Shutters Inc. Hello to everyone in Rockhampton, and hello, Tanya. And we did. I tried also to teach them to stray from the obvious. And a case in point was at the old hotel where I was staying. It's a place called the Criterion in Rockhampton, and it's the oldest, you know, hotel stroke pub in Rockhampton. Lovely place. And there's a beautiful old staircase there. And the first thing we did was, I spoke in the morning about, you know, wedding photography, basic principles, equipment, you know, what a person needs to have and be in order to be a successful wedding photographer. And I talked a lot about personality,
yeah.
And a lot about, you know, your approach. And I just, you know, went through all of those things. And then we did a little bit of window light photography to start off. And then we moved into the foyer area where there's this big staircase. And I said, okay, look, everybody, I'll be right with you. You go and wait in the foyer. I'll be right with you. And I just grabbed my camera gear. By the time I got in there, everyone had set up their tripods and their cameras around the base of the stairway. Right. Because they were planning on doing the obvious photographing up the stairway thing, right? Now, I don't believe in that shot. I just do not believe in photographing up a stairway.
Yep.
If you're photographing up a stairway, you're going to get more chins than you need,
yep.
Especially if the bride is a little larger, and you're going to get more nostril than you need. Not only that, but the light from the window at the top of the stairs was a far better light source than it was background.
Right.
And I immediately just said, well, I stood on the stairs and made it my platform, as is my wont, you know, and beheld my crowds.
Like Julius Caesar.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, I just sort of addressed them and said, look, you know, you've all set up here because you've seen this shot done a million times. Let's put a brand new light on it and let's go to the top of the stairs and photograph down. And so everybody came to the top of the stairs.
Did you let them do the shots that they were planning on doing?
Yes,
It would have been good to give them that A-B comparison. Like, you shoot the shot you think, and then I'll show you how I'd approach it so that they would have then got a before and after.
Yes. Well, something anyway, I'll consider next time. Actually, a good idea. I just, for the sake, we had so much to cover that day.
Yeah,
There were so many locations that we had planned. I just got stuck straight into it. But no, a good point. And yes, when we got to the top of the stairs and I set the model up halfway up the stairs and I got her leaning very sort of forward, very, you know, very stylistically, as it were, into the... And she was just an amateur model. She was not a pro. She was just a girl who'd said, yeah, I'll do it. And it was a good thing because if you have a pro model, it's sort of... At a workshop...
They come with preconceived ideas.
Well, they do, and they're also, you know, what bride is... When do you get to photograph a professional model as a bride? Mm. You know, the bride will be, as you found out yourself recently, just a normal person who doesn't even necessarily like having his or her photo taken as a bride or groom. So having these two girls who were just normal, local, pretty girls who just decided, yeah, that sounds like fun, was, you know, an advantage. So I got her posing, you know, very forward-leaning on the stairs, the light from the window coming down onto her face, and you actually looked down on her and the stairs formed a rhythmic pattern, the banister formed a leading line, and then then there she was with the light from the top window at the top of the stairs coming down very softly on her face, and it was a completely different shot.
Yeah.
So all day long we were finding these locations that are typical Rockhampton locations for wedding photography. Everybody knew them.
Yeah.
And then I would but having gone on some of the websites of photographers in the area, I thought to myself, yes, they're doing the standard, this is what you do when you get to this location shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught them otherwise, by my philosophy of find the light and put them in it. Yeah. We went to a building called Customs House.
Right.
It's a government building. It's a stone building. Has two curved stairways that lead up to a curved sort of area that goes around the front of the building. And then there are these colonnades. And one of the ladies, you know, said to me as we arrived, she said, yeah, I don't know why we've come here because, you know, everybody comes here. Yeah, you put the bride and the groom out the front of the building and you take a picture of them in front of the building. And that's what everybody does, Bruce. That's what
Talk
the local
about
photographers...
photography by numbers.
Well, it is. It's photography by numbers. And I said, well, you know, I arrived, and the first thing I did was I just ran up the stairs, and I just quickly scouted the light. I looked for the light coming through the colonnades. I looked for the textures. I looked for leading lines and patterns. And I taught them that that's the normal concept. Yeah, oh, it's a beautiful building. But the problem with a lot of wedding photography and, you know, a lot of portrait photography too, and we have talked about this on the podcast, but it really brought it home to me and to them, was that the subject, and this is, you know, something we're trying to get home here on Shutters Inc., must be dominant. The subject must be dominant. And in this case, the subject is the bride and the groom, not Customs House, not the staircase, not the old car, you know, not the church. The subject is the bride and the groom. All the other things are context. So we went up the stairs and we used, you know, windows, we used colonnades, we used the stairs as patterns, but not, you know, not as backgrounds. And everybody just, you know, said, wow, we've never thought of this place in this context before. We've never thought of this place for these kinds of photographs. You know, we've always thought that the building was grand, and so them standing in front of it had to look good. Well, no, actually. All it does is just make the building fantastic. And, oh, we've
got,
by the way,
it's a landscape with two people in it.
Yeah, bingo, bingo. And as, you know, oh, I was taking this picture of the building, and a bride and groom walked by and had a kiss in front of it, you know. By the way, they parked their old car in front as well. I mean, so many people do those kinds of photographs. And my entire approach on the wedding day particularly was not to. Find the light, put them in it, make them the subject. And these key principles I take for granted. And as you're setting something up, you know, I'm so used to being able to walk into a context, walk into a situation, one, look where the light is and what kind of light it is, and two, then I look for textures and other things that will make it compositionally dynamic or pleasing. And that's exactly what we did at Customs House. That's what we did on the staircase. And we even had an old car available to us. We did, you know, and that shot is put them in front of the old car, have them kiss, and there's your shot. Mm-hmm. And I taught them a completely different approach to using the car or whatever other thing they might want their photo taken with. And making the, you know, the bride and groom dominant and everything else subordinate, but nonetheless there, you know. And it, you know, basically, a lot of the group were saying, I can't believe how you do this so quickly. You can just walk into a situation, put the model there, you get her to pose this way, and then bang, within 30 seconds, you've got a shot set up. You know, I can't believe that you can do this. And
but that just comes from experience.
Exactly. That's all. That's exactly what it comes from. First of all, an understanding of the very things that I'm teaching. Find the light and put them in it, and then you look for everything else. And that just comes now as a very, very quick process to me because I've done it so many times.
Yeah.
But you're wondering as you're teaching, you know, this has just come so easy to me and we've set this up. Have I actually taught them anything?
Right.
You know, you're worried because it's all happened so quickly and then they're taking their photos and you're finessing it as you go. You know, I have to pay each person some attention, so I'll walk through the group, I'll see how their photos are going as they're shooting, and I'm thinking, boy, you know, have we actually taught them anything? And then you realize from their responses and from the final wrap session that they learned so much.
Yeah.
And as photographers, when we're teaching, we take so much for granted, which is the problem with teaching photography, that so many people teach way up here, when really what people are really seriously lacking is way down here.
The fundamentals, yeah.
The fundamentals, yeah. Because everybody's always teaching them way up here, and no one ever just says, hey, look, you've got to start here, and once you understand these fundamentals and these principles, then you can move on and develop your own style. But if you don't get these things right, you'll never get anything right.
Mate, if it's any consolation, I quite often feel the same when I'm teaching audio to people, because you're trying to explain something and you sort of have to pull yourself up and go, well, hang on, do they understand the basics which underpin what I'm trying to tell them now?
Yes.
I know where you're coming from.
And so many photo workshops, you know, photographers are very jealous of their reputations and they want to appear, somewhere up a ladder that, is good for them to appear as. But really, the best way to impress people is to teach them well and take and send them home with something that they can, that they, for the rest of their photographic lives, will say, I remember that workshop. I remember how it influenced my photography 20 years on. You know, I remember that day or those 2 days or those 3 days or whatever it was. I hope that they will take something from that that will just ultimately change their photography, you know, for the rest of their lives. If I've done that, you know, then that's a daunting privilege, daunting honor for me. And the way I look at it was, they may
and
feel
and you don't honored. Have to feel guilty for taking their money.
No, I very rarely feel guilty for that. But trust me, I earned every cent.
Yeah. Man. Oh, for sure.
Kerry, when I came home, my wife said to me, well, look, we have to unpack your suitcases. And I said, oh, look, don't worry about that. We'll do that tomorrow. She said, no, I'm talking about the ones under your eyes.
Yeah.
You know, I was a tired little boy, I'll tell you what. You know, but because I pour myself in. I really, really do. And, you know, I had a great time. I made some new friends. But the interesting thing is that each time I learn something myself in teaching others, or I reaffirm something myself in teaching others. And, you know, if indeed, like I said, if you're listening and you're in a town in Australia and you'd like me to do the same for you, I would be more than happy to. It's just a matter of getting enough people and I can get on a plane and be there. You know, I mean, I'll come to anywhere in the world. It's no problem if you're listening in. But we had a lot of fun. I made some new friends and it was a really great thing. But yes, those basic principles are very, very important. But you had your wedding, of course. Now, what did you find as you were photographing this wedding yourself? I mean, you no doubt took some things from the podcast that you've been learning over these 93 episodes.
Yep.
But what did you find from actually being in the hot seat?
What I found was that I felt out of my depth. This is only the second wedding I've ever shot. And the first wedding was 5 years ago. I really felt like I was going in. It's crazy because I knew that I was going to do a better job of it than I did at the first wedding I shot 5 years ago. And the results of that wedding were fine. And, you know, Dave was very happy with those shots that I did at his wedding. But even knowing that and knowing that I've learned a lot since, I still felt like I was almost... like I said, out of my depth was probably the best description. I felt like I didn't really have enough control over the timing of the day. And I guess my biggest concern was thinking that I needed time to set shots up and I was conscious of the time ticking away. And because of that, I feel like I rushed some shots that I really should have taken more time with. There were one or two instances where I didn't notice at the time that my 7D was, this is just something I need to get more familiar with, you know, the way my autofocus works. You've got your different focus zones. And there were a couple of shots where the camera had decided to use a different focusing zone to the one I wanted to focus with. And
yep.
You know, and I just didn't notice it as I was taking the shot. And that sort of frustrated me. When I got home and I, you know, imported all the photos into Lightroom and then got to see them on this 23-inch monitor, it was like, holy crap, the camera wasn't focusing where I thought it was.
Nice.
So that sort of really annoyed me. And, you know, and I just, you know, came home just totally paranoid that I'd screwed the whole thing up. You know, and Kath came and had a look on the Sunday morning. She goes, what are you talking about? These look great, you know. And then Dan and Kate came over through the week and had a look at some of the shots that I'd already processed. And they were just absolutely blown away. They're just going, oh, man, these look fantastic. And that sort of took a bit of weight off my shoulders. I thought, well, as long as they're happy, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
I said to Kath before the wedding, I said, I'm more nervous of showing these shots to Shelton than I am of showing them to Dan and Kate.
Well, folks, for the record, have you put this link up on the Audio to You website?
I haven't yet. I've only put that gallery up this morning, so you and I are the only two people who've seen it so far. But I will.
Are you going to allow others to
see
it? Yes,
I will. There's only 15 photos. They're just the ones that I've processed so far. But you're right. I did try and keep in mind all of the things that we've talked about, you know, in terms of, you know, rule of thirds, leading lines, certainly find the light and put them in it. I was really conscious of that the whole day.
Good. But that's your first battle. That's your first port of call.
Yeah.
You can be in the worst of circumstances, you know, the most horrible place. But if you find a shaft of light and you meet her correctly and pose correctly, your shot is taken care of.
Yep.
It's as simple as that. It really is, from my experience, as simple as that.
When you're shooting, do you ever have to take two or three shots to get the flash balanced with the natural light, or do you pretty much nail it the minute you walk into a environment?
I think every process takes a little bit of bracketing, you know, a little bit of trial and error. And I found this even while I was, and it's a good thing, while I was doing the workshop, I don't actually get to do a lot of photography myself because I'm wandering around, you know, you know, looking at everybody else's work. And that's what and then, you know, finessing the pose, getting back to readjust the bride or the model, because they tend to lose their pose after 5 minutes of standing in the same place while people are shooting. So I don't actually get to do a lot myself. But some of the photography that I was doing, you know, I found a bit of a battle, and I said, okay, are you noticing what I'm noticing? And I said, well, look, I'm having the same problem you are. You know, our white balance is too warm. The exposure is burning out on the dress from the light, you know. And so people are saying, yeah, I'm having that problem. What do I do? What do I do? And so, good. I'd say, look, I'm having exactly the same problem. So, you know, let's work it through. And I would actually address the group and say, okay, well, the dress is burning out on the window side, so what do we do? And I'd get various responses. And then I'd say, okay, that's the right answer. Point to the person. Well done. And then we would correct it. So very much so. And the interesting thing in response to your question about flash is, well, yes, sometimes it does take a little bit of work.
Yeah.
I basically rely a lot on the Nikon TTL system and the iTTL system, which is very rarely gets me wrong, but sometimes it does. But on the for the entire 3 days I was there, I didn't use an ounce of flash. And that was one thing that really actually, you know, stunned a couple of them particularly, because they use flash for everything.
Yeah.
And I just taught them, no, you find the light and put them in it. And the moment you add light, you've altered everything.
Yeah.
So that was a major lesson. But to answer your question, I have to work through a shot just like everybody else does. Yeah.
Because I was sort of conscious of feeling like I didn't know what I was doing, you know, or being perceived to not know what I was doing if it took me, you know, three or four goes of just, you know, getting the flash balanced with the natural light.
That just comes with
experience as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it will, you know, as you shoot, you know, more portraits and weddings. And weddings are a daunting thing.
Yeah.
Because you have one chance to get them right, and that's Johnny on the spot. Mm-hmm. You're working with two amateur people. They're not models. You've got a limited amount of time. And, you know, you don't always necessarily have the best of circumstances. But I think you managed in some pretty, I mean, you found the light and put them in it, but it looked to me like you had some difficult light to work with.
Yes, I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah, and you did very nicely.
And the rose garden in which they got married was not a particularly stunning background. The flowers aren't in full bloom by any stretch of the imagination, so there were lots of vines and things that actually looked quite bare. And so in terms of backdrop, I felt like I really had to work for it. So,
yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Well, if that's your first wedding night, you've done really well. Sorry, I missed that. What was that?
I said I'm glad that you think I did okay with it. So,
well, everybody, look at Bruce's wedding, let us know what you think. I would only have one suggestion, and that is, and this was something that we did a lot on the day, is that a couple may feel comfortable in a certain pose, but if there's too much space between their faces, it lacks in a two-dimensional image.
Yep.
It lacks this element of intimacy or closeness in their relationship.
Yep. And I'm looking at the third picture in the gallery.
Yeah, just try and bring faces closer.
Yeah.
And that would be all I could suggest. And this is something, again, that the workshops really brought forward, because we used a young couple who weren't married. They were boyfriend and girlfriend, but they certainly had a relationship. They had no problem, holding each other, hugging each other, kissing each other, whatever, because they were in a relationship. But even they, you'd bring them in close, you'd walk away, 2 minutes later they've pulled away again.
Yeah.
And yet they have, it's not because they were strangers, it's just because they feel, a bit weird maybe being this close in a photo. But in a photo, you just got to tweak it a little more, work it a little bit harder, not overly, but just a little more.
I think that was another thing I became conscious of when I got home and looked at the shots. It was like, I really didn't spend enough brain cycles on getting the poses right. I think I approached the whole thing from a technical aspect rather than a necessarily.
Oh, you did well.
Aesthetic,
you did well.
Posing
is a difficult thing.
Yeah.
And again, I taught when I was up in Rockhampton that the easiest way to pose a couple is you start with one person.
Right.
And in this case, in every case, I usually start with the bride. I put her in the light, set up her dress, I compose the picture, and start with her. It's much easier to start with one rather than just put two in there and go, now what do I do?
Yeah.
You start with one, you get that one person right, and then the second person, which is usually the groom, he's Sideshow Bob, really, at any wedding, right? And you bring him in. He fits, let's face it, he fits easier into a scene than a bride does, because a bride has so much more going on. She's got a larger dress, she's got a bouquet, so there's more going on with her. So I usually set the bride up first, put her in the light, pose it, get the dress where I want it, so she's either turned to me or she's on the side or some angle to the camera. Very rarely, if ever, shoulder, front on, but there's usually an angle. And then the groom, he just comes in. Now, if the groom goes first, then he's, usually in a pose, usually maybe, against a column or a tree or whatever, and then the bride comes in and leans into him. So posing is often easiest done by setting up one person first and then making the other person fit in with them, rather than trying to get both people to do something at the same time when you have nothing established. That's at least my method. Also, if you are selling a wedding, if this was something you were making money from, quite practically, it sells you twice as many portraits, because you've got the bride on her own and then you've got the bride and the groom.
Yep.
Now, is she going to decide on only the one shot? Well, you've got the option that maybe she'll want both. Or if you're putting together an album, she may want the page to flow, starting with her and finishing up with him. So she might, ask for a page or an extra two pages so that that series will work. And you've sold more pages in your album. That's a financial matter. But if you were a wedding photographer who was doing, things professionally, those things are good to think of. But basically, it doubles your opportunities. And then in that setting, I was also saying, look, now that we've got the two of them set up, well, firstly, we set up the one, we do a full, we do a half, and then we do a head and shoulder. Then we come back and we've got the groom in there. We do a full, we do a half, and then we do a head and shoulder. So in one setting, which has taken you just a minute to set up, you've got half a dozen different shots.
And
you don't actually have to move them all over the place to get a different variation of photographs.
Sure.
So that's basically, the way that I've always worked a wedding. Set up one, bring the other in to match that person. And it works far more easily, and a lot in the group said, "Oh, I never thought of that." I've just sort of got the couple out, got them to hug, and put them in a circumstance, that made it all look very pretty, which is the entirely wrong approach to portrait and wedding photography. Wedding photography, particularly, is not about buildings and anything like that. It's about a bride and groom, and the rest is context.
Yeah.
So, but you did well, Bruce. You got that point very nicely.
Well, thank you.
Even in bad light, you did well. And that's something else that I taught in Rockhampton, because in Queensland you get a lot of bad light.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's Queensland. They're up near the Tropic of Capricorn, and you know, you don't get good light up there for, you know, very
long. Are you saying that the closer you get to the equator, the more vertical the light source?
Mm-hmm. And the shorter lived your sweet light.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so, your twilight would be much shorter.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you move, you know, north or south from the equator, you get longer periods of sweet light.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's beautiful. But in Queensland, the light is awful. I mean, it's just awful. That's a completely different thing. I taught them, well, what do you do? You know, what if you can't find the light and put them in it? What if you've got bad light? So, you know, my lesson was, well, the light is usually on an angle. Very rarely is it, you know, straight above you. There's usually some kind of angle. So I taught them how to rim light with, you know, even in bad light, and use a reflector, you know, so that they got something from any particular place, rather than, you know, and use dark backdrops. If you can find an old building that's in the shade behind you, or, you know, a bunch of bushes off somewhere behind them, just use something to set them apart by a bit of rim lighting, even in bad light, using a reflector in the front, and you can actually pull off a nice photograph. And I think in yours, you actually did that. Put them in. You had not the best light, but you still actually worked it very nicely. So my hat's off to you, Bruce. Oh, I think you did a great job.
I did as best as I could.
and look, the couple's going to love them. They really will.
Yeah, well, like I said, they came over and they just had a quick look at a few of the shots. And I'd actually, because my monitor is not actually calibrated by, you know, professional photographer standards, I tweaked half a dozen images and I dropped them onto a CD and I went up to my local Photoshop and I got them printed out as just, you know, standard 6x4 prints, just so that I could get a test print to see how they were going to look, because in the past I've you know, done image tweaking, you know, here in Photoshop or Lightroom, and then had it printed and found that it's come back a bit darker than I anticipated. So I thought, well, I'll do some test prints just to make sure I'm on track. And when Dan and Kate came round, I said, oh, look, you know, here's half a dozen that I had printed this morning just as test prints. And they were like, oh, wow, these are awesome. Can we take these? And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, I don't need them. So
good on you.
So they were happy. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm glad that they did. And looking at them, you know, I can't see why they wouldn't like them. They were very, very well done.
Thank you.
We should wrap up any minute now, but a couple of things, unless you've got more to say,
Bruce. Well, I was just going to quickly say, for anyone who is interested in knowing any of the things that I did with the post-processing, because I thought image 6 might cause a few questions. Because
is that the one where they're walking away and there's a vignette?
No.
No?
It's two after that.
Okay.
It's the image at the left-hand side of the second row.
Okay.
The reason I thought this might, you know, cause some questions is from the colors in it. And I thought, if anyone was interested, what I did with that shot was, after I'd basically tweaked the image in, you know, the natural setting, like in terms of the light and the raw data and whatnot, I then added a curves layer and I set it to an E6 cross process curve. And I then reduced the opacity of that layer so that the cross process effect wasn't so over the top. Images 9 through to 15, I added an 85 warming filter as an adjustment layer.
Right. So. Very nice. Very nice. Well, there you go. Well, folks, you know, he's not only a whiz with sound, and, you know, he's a whiz with Photoshop as well, and Lightroom. Yeah. Speaking of which, Richard Annable, he's the one who has coined the subtext of art. Good on you, Richard.
Crap, giggle, giggle.
yep, and he's got it down pat. Richard actually has talked, you know, he's sent me an email that said --podcast topic --. Hopefully the subject caught your attention, he said in the subject line of the email. Yes, it did, Richard. Thank you. And you said you wanted to give me a gentle reminder nudge about my workflow. And look, workflow has been an issue for me for a long time. Basically, my workflow was get the images off the card and put them into Photoshop, batch what you can, and work through the rest of them fairly singly, because I hadn't found anything particularly that I was enamored with in terms of a workflow. Now, of course, that I have Lightroom and I'm living in it, you know, I'm learning it. I've actually established that my workflow from now on will be as simple as put your images in the folder that you've named, and then, yes, Lightroom will be the means by which I now go through my images. And the great thing about it is that you can, as you would have learned, Bruce, is that what you do to one image, you can then do to images of your choice to keep them consistent, which used to be a one-by-one battle for me almost in Photoshop. But Lightroom and then final tweakings for any images, especially wedding portrait work, will be Photoshop.
Yeah.
You know, after that, as a, you know, whether it's RAW or JPEG. But Richard, it's as simple as that. And it'll be Lightroom and Photoshop from here on in, and that's basically it. I shoot in RAW and JPEG simultaneously. I find a wedding far easier to process in JPEG than RAW, but there'll be some images that, you know, you'll want to do a bit of work to, and so there'll be you know, the RAW files open in Lightroom, and away we go. But it really is as simple as that. But more than that, Richard's email talks about projects. Last week I was talking about the thing that I'm doing the least these days seems to be actually taking pictures. And he's given us a couple of interesting ideas. I don't know that that I'll be able to do them, but I don't know, I might. One, the numbers game. And this is interesting, Richard. The numbers game is a project where I started taking a photo of the number one. And then, in my case, a brick wall outside a house. The rules are simple. Try to find the next number and shoot it in an interesting location or interesting way. No more than one number per day, and the number must be a whole number, not zoomed in from a longer number. Sounds easy? It has taken me 6 weeks to reach number nine. Number nine. Where's my copy of the White Album? Yes, number nine. Number nine. Number nine. No, not ringing a bell, Bruce? Which backwards is turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man. That's very, very interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So far, photos have included the back of a soccer Guernsey, an MCG light pylon, that's the Melbourne Cricket Ground light pylon, and the Virgin Domestic Terminal at the airport. As I am not planning on dying for a little while, it'll be interesting to see how high I get. So 6 weeks to reach the number nine. There's a project. Project number two, 365 days. This is a Flickr group that I belong to. The challenge, take one self-portrait each day for a year. I've found this group to be an amazing incentive to shoot and look forward to coming up with a different angle each day. To sum up, projects can force you, and this is the point, projects can force you out of a stale approach to photography. Shortly, some friends and I go shooting with monthly, and I are going out into the world armed only with our 50mm 1.8 lens. No other lenses allowed. That's an interesting project.
Yeah.
Another type of project I've heard of is to lock yourself in your bathroom. Don't come out till you've taken 100 photos. Okay. Interesting, Richard. Good on you. Projects can open up new views to photography, and I'm glad for the inspiration they've provided me. And I'm giving you a gentle reminder nudge about your workflow. Smiley face. Cheers. Richard. Now, Richard, that last sentence, not the one about the gentle reminder, but the one before that, projects can open up new views to photography, and I'm glad for the inspiration they've provided me. What a great concept, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because you do find that you get into a bit of a rut, and you do the same thing, the things you're used to, and it's good to break out, force yourself to be in a different sort of situation. As I may have said once on this podcast, my son and I, when we were in Canada last year, we realized that we'd spent the whole time just shooting off with our SLRs and doing the wide-angle landscapes and la la la, and we hadn't actually just walked through the forest. So we put our gadget bags in the boot of the car, and, you know, we just went for a walk, but we took little compacts with us. But what the photographs that we managed to get just carrying our little Ricoh compacts were fantastic. We got a chance to walk and enjoy the forest, which we hadn't really done, but we also had a limitation placed on our abilities to photograph, but it forced us into a different mindset. I mean, he's only 16, and he learns so much, and I'm 44, and I learned a lot. And, you know, so it really is an interesting thing. I'd like to hear from all our listeners about projects that they would consider doing, one perhaps that we should consider doing together, maybe for our Flickr group. And, you know, we can see what we come up with, and maybe after our landscape competition is done, mm-hmm. we can then embark on a project together that will, you know, that we can upload photos to the Flickr group and say, well, here's the project, you know, and we've been all around the world shooting this project. If there's something that we sort of maybe via the Flickr group, and Richard, if you want to put this up on the Flickr group, you know, as what are your suggestions, please do that. And we'll maybe get together on this. The bathroom idea is interesting. I don't know if I trust that one, but you know, the self-portrait thing, I don't know if I trust that one either, because I am not as good looking as I used to be. And the numbers thing, look, there's all sorts of interesting projects, but let's do one together is a thought after our landscape competition is you know, is up and running. So
absolutely
completed
now,
with.
Sorry to just jump in. Have you had a chance to look at your diary regarding the 28th of October?
Not as yet.
Right.
It is a possibility to do, but I'm going to have to get back to you all on that one.
Yep.
So I'd love to do it for all the Melbourne gang.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, I put on the Flickr site the Rockhampton photo workshops, and if you want to have a look at, you know, what we did, or a little some comments from those who came, it is, my blog is mentioned there on the Rockhampton photo workshops, you know, discussion in Shutters Inc. Flickr site. Now, Richard and Graham have both suggested that we do one here in Melbourne. If you guys want to, I would be more than happy to do that. So if you want to do a photo workshop together here in Melbourne, I just need to, if you want to do maybe a wedding one, that's always very interesting. I have a location, I have a dress, I have the wherewithal, we can certainly do this, but anywhere in the world, you want to do a workshop, I'm happy to come.
Mm-hmm.
If you own a villa in Tuscany, and you want a photo workshop done, trust me, I'd be more than happy to do it. Man, you know, that's no problem at all.
Yeah. All right, mate, well, thank you very much for all of that.
My pleasure. No worries. And we'll catch you up very, very soon.
Yep.
Something I should have told you before we went to air, Bruce. You might want to edit this out. I don't know. Or leave it in. I'm not sure, but I'll be away next Thursday.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not exactly...
For how long?
Just a few days. I have been working, as my wife so kindly reminds me, for 21 days straight.
Right.
And these suitcases aren't unpacking themselves.
Yeah.
So I need a few days off.
Sure.
So we've got a little beach house down at Ocean Grove for a few days.
Nice.
Where we'll be going just so I can do nothing but maybe sit, right, read, take some pictures for a few days and get my head back together.
Okay.
But we might
just take a week off then.
As long as everybody doesn't mind, I'll try and, you know, keep as interactive on Flickr as I possibly can. But I just won't be here to record the podcast for next week.
That's fine. So there'll be no Shutters Inc. next week, people. We'll be back in a fortnight. I'll you know, keep posting on the Flickr group and whatnot, and we can continue conversations there.
That's for sure.
Of course, in the meantime, people, we're still awaiting those submissions for the landscape competition.
Mm-hmm.
/ listener assignment.
Yes.
And I think that'll pretty much do it. You can send those images to me at studio@audiotu.com, or you can write to Shelton at Shelton@audiotu.com.
Now, are we getting any?
I haven't had any as yet.
Okay. All right. We'll have to fix that.
Maybe
we've scared
them with the Level Horizons thing.
Okay. Look, you're allowed to submit photos with unlevel horizons.
They just won't win.
That's it. They just won't win. Not if Bruce has anything to do with it.
Cool. All right, mate. You have a good week.
You too,
and enjoy
bud.
Your weekend away, and we'll talk with you in a fortnight.
You bet. Sounds good.
See you, mate.
See you, bud.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control-D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.